is Road to the Draft with Cal Toomey and Matt Edwards.
Hello, everyone, and welcome to Road to the Draft. Cal Toomey, you're back from the Gold Coast. No tan, though.
No tan. No, not much beach time for me. No, it was a nice couple of days, though. It was good to be up there. I always like the Gold Coast. I'm a big fan.
Excellent.
I should take the draft back there.
We probably should, but unfortunately, I'm not sure we're going to get a trip this year, are we?
No. Well, it's looking like Melbourne is the most likely option at the moment. Hopefully Tassie comes in with a late bid, but if you had to put your bets on anything, it'd be Melbourne.
How was the footy up there, though, under-16s champs?
Yeah, it was okay. We should ask our guest how it was, though.
I think we should introduce him now. It is Richmond's recruiting manager, premiership recruiting manager, in fact, Matt Clark. Matt, welcome back to the podcast. It's been a while.
It has. Thanks, Nat. Thanks, Cal. Good to be here.
What did you make of last week?
Oh, it's a bit like you, Cal. It's terrific to get up to the Gold Coast for a bit of sun, particularly after getting through the under-18s, where everyone's a little bit weary. So get up a bit of sun and get a bit of vitamin D, is it?
I think it's D.
Something like that.
All of them.
It's definitely D.
Definitely D. So, no, it was good. And you get a bit of a handle on what the group looks like. We've got someone looking at it constantly, the 16s and 17s group. So to have a bit of an idea to going into it was pretty good.
Hey, congratulations on the premiership, because you haven't been in since the Tigers' triumph last year. So congratulations to you and your recruiting team and department on, I guess, the huge impact that you guys made in getting that success. What was it like for you grand final day? Where did you watch it and how did you take it all in?
It was a terrific day. I was up in the coach's box or the stats box that sort of aligns with it. A few of our other guys in Francis Jackson and Blair Hartley was up there from our team. So sort of when you're in the coach's box, you can't get too emotionally involved in the game. You've got to be pretty strategic. You've got to keep your voice down. You don't want to be sort of kicking the desk or thumping things. So, so it was sort of we're pretty confident with only 2 minutes to go, I think. Everyone was pretty under control until that point. And then, there's a bit of an outpouring of emotion, as everyone can see generally on grand final day, no matter who wins, down on the boundary line. So, and probably from that point of view, from what I do or what we do, is the emotion sort of comes out because of the amount of work I feel that we spend away from our families. So to actually have a bit of justification to go, well, this is why I do what I do, because for a day like this, and the amount of work that goes in from a lot of people inside the football club to come out for that one day, and some people might think it's not as significant for others, but it is for us. So,
obviously, there's a lot of joy and happiness that comes with a premiership, but for you watching players that, you know, you'd been a part of recruiting, is there a sense of pride for you watching them on grand final day?
Yeah, definitely. You see some of those boys, particularly some of the guys that have come later in the draft, or maybe some rookies that have had to work a little bit harder than others to prove their worth. And you get a bit of a real sense of satisfaction that they're actually contributing the way you thought they might be able to. I think when you watch them as a junior and then you pick them, I don't think I ever envision what they might actually end up being, like if they're going to be a premiership player or a Brownlow medalist. But you see in them things that might be able to do those things. So I think if anyone sat there and told you that they think they were definitely going to be one of these, I'm not too sure that they're telling you the truth.
Was there one or two on grand final day that you're most proud of? You know, the guys that you've gotten to know, you've been at their houses when they were 16, 17, you've gotten to know these guys, been on overseas trips potentially with them as well. Is there a couple that really came to mind that made you a little bit emotional or a little bit most satisfied about?
Yeah, I think so. I mean, obviously, talk of those guys that came a little bit later. Dylan Grimes is probably one, because he was one of the ones that was in my first year or so at Richmond, and he'd gone through a national draft and didn't get picked. And I remember Francis asking me to give him a call because we're going to invite him down for a bit of a rookie search sort of day, and we invited a heap down. And I remember speaking to him, and he was pretty shattered at the time that he hadn't got picked, and he came down and he trained as well as anybody, and then finally got an opportunity through a pre-season draft. So and had some injuries early, so he's had to work really hard on his body to get there. So he's probably one, and you can probably see the way our other players talk about Dylan as a person, how much of an impact he's had on the group.
We'll talk a little bit more about Richmond later on in the show, but I want to touch on this year's draft pool, and what do you make of it so far?
You're always tracking it a few years in advance, so you've sort of got a bit of a handle on what it looks like. I think it's probably pretty strong at the top end, as probably most people think. I think it evens out reasonably quickly after, the first 10 to 15 picks, which a lot of drafts tend to do. I don't think it's a super draft, like maybe some have said, but, I mean, what it really is a super draft, has anyone ever come up with any...
No, well, that's a different... definitions of that, isn't it? Is it the top 12 or is it the guys
the
that you can the depth?
Yeah,
the depth. So, and there'll always be players picked later in the draft, and rookie picks will become good players. So, I'm not really worried too much about what it looks like, what other people might think of it. We just got to get our list together, which we're doing now.
I'm sure you learnt plenty out of the championships, but did you see many guys rise up and push their stocks up throughout the under 18 championships, or was it a case of the performers being the guys you probably expected to be the guys who would play like they did?
Yeah, I didn't see a lot that really jumped up, and maybe that's because of our recruiting team's bulk of work coming into that. Some guys that I hadn't probably seen as much as a couple of others had, and they were always saying, look, this guy can do this, and it was sort of a bit of a tick off to me to sort of turn around and go, yeah, you're right, he's a good player, he's going okay. I think the Allies program worked a lot better this year. Obviously, they had more lead-in, a bit more of a camp to get into, gelled a bit better together, and they played some really good footy, so that was a really big step up from the Carnival point of view, from our opinion.
Just on that respect, in terms of some of the guys coming to you and saying, look, we've got these couple of guys to keep an eye on, how do you sort of set up your recruiting department in terms of areas and bases, and do you sort of share it around, or are you on top of everyone as recruiting manager? How do you guys set up?
Yeah, everyone needs to have a really good opinion of the whole pool, but we obviously set it up. We have Luke Williams, who's a really experienced recruiting guy, got great relationships and great respect in the industry, that looks after the bulk of Victoria. With my background, South Australian, I tend to still do that, and WA as well. Richard Taylor works for us in the Division 2 space and does a lot of work on the Northern Academies in Tasmania NT. And then we've got, obviously, Will Thursfield, who's come on board this year, who works in the pro-scout space with Blair Hartley in our list.
Yep.
But we're all sort of trying to funnel those states and programs into something that everybody can get their teeth into, the real hard players. So, but everyone needs to have their own opinion. There's no point sitting there going, OK, we're going to pick it off one person's opinion. Everyone has to have a really good opinion, and that's why coming together for the Carnival is really important.
Everyone wants to know who's going to be the number one draft pick. In your view, do you think Jack Lukosius is the best player in the draft pool at the moment?
I'm not 100% sure. To be perfectly honest, I haven't put a lot of thought into who exactly
that's
is.
That's why we can ask you, Matt, because well, I don't think you're going to have pick one.
Well, maybe
unless
I do.
Unless you trade.
Unless we trade in, yeah. Unless you use some magic beans and get into pick one. I honestly don't know. I reckon there's probably 4 to 5 guys who have got claims to be number one, and I'd never really like to speculate on who those players are. And a little bit the way I think is, with respect to the young players themselves, there's enough pressure on them, and they don't really need me to be saying, oh, this guy should be number one and this guy shouldn't. All their mates have been talking about, oh, this guy said this about you, and those types of things. So I don't really tend to do that, but I think there's probably 4 to 5 guys who could be, and our luxury is that we don't need to know now, and it's a good story to know now if someone says it, but we probably don't need to know until probably draft night.
It's probably a good guess, though, that Sam Walsh is one of those guys. Do you think that clubs near the top end, or even your own club, would look at how taller types have gone in recent years and maybe lean away from those sort of prospects, given they've taken time and the game's changed with them, whereas midfielders, you probably know what you're going to get?
Yeah, maybe. I think the thing with the young talls, particularly early in the draft, is there's so limited positions on the ground for them to play, so there's so much scrutiny on them as well, and everyone expects so much from them. So whereas the midfielders can sort of play midfield or wing or half-back or half-forward, so they get the chance to play a little bit and there's less pressure on them to perform. So when you've only got a few spots on the ground on your list for tours and they get picked early, there's a lot of pressure on them. So having said that, I think these tours in this draft have probably got a little bit more athleticism than some in the past, which will stand them in good stead, I think.
Do you have a list of names that you're happy with at the moment? I know you probably go to draft night with a certain number.
Yep.
At the moment, though, do you have a list of 35, 40, 45, you know, are you at that point in your planning?
Yeah, we're pretty close. I think individually each of us have probably got our own sort of lists that we actually haven't gelled together to have a concrete list as yet. Everyone's probably got a few guys that are still wanting to track a little bit closer than others. We've obviously got our draft boards in our office that have all their players on them and where they sit at the moment, and sometimes you might
What's a draft them. Office look like?
What do you imagine it looks like, Cal?
I imagine it looks like this room, but just magnets everywhere.
Magnets colours, and post-it notes?
Post-it and also colours, like maybe academy colours or father sons or these type of
things. There's a bit of that going on. Yeah, there's a few. We've got a couple of really big whiteboards that have one's a main board where the players that we think are going to get drafted or we think are getting drafted have sort of graduated to, and another board that has every state and every competition, and they have their own magnets. And then we'll look at next year's board as well, which is in the room. So, so there's plenty of colours up there as well, and there's plenty of magnets to be able to be moved. It'd be nice to go to one of those nice big electronic screens, I think, to be able to just use your fingers and things like that.
A touch screen, that'd be pretty cool. Yeah, you need to talk to someone at Richmond about that.
Need to talk to someone who might sponsor that, I think.
the word's out now, so that was the show.
Cal, I imagine that's what your bedroom looks like with post-it notes for your phantom draft.
That's exactly what
you didn't
looks
know
like
where
that.
I was going with that, did
no,
you?
I wasn't sure where you were going with that one.
All right, Matt, I want to take you back to last year and last year's draft, and someone who is one of our favourites on this show, Jack Higgins. You took him at pick 17. He's played, I think, 12 games so far this year. How have you seen his development, and did you expect him to play so early?
We always expected that he'd play this year, whether that was really early or late in the season. We always thought he was going to play a bulk of games. Jack, as you know, Cal and Nat, you've spent a bit of time with him. He's pretty focused individual on his footy, so he was always going to come in and work really hard. What Jack had was his running power was already there, so he's already been able to come in and show a lot of our guys and our coaches, wow, this kid can really run, so he can play some positions and positions early. So if he's not touching the footy, he's still actually having an impact during his running.
So he's playing a bit of forward early, and he seems to have moved up the ground off line and get more of the ball.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, he's obviously gone through the centre bounce a number of times as well, so our coaches are more than happy for him to go in there because he's actually got quick reaction with his hands. He actually can get out of the stoppage too when we win it and obviously close out defensively.
He's an interesting player. I mean, we obviously got to know him really well last year, but clubs in some respect maybe question whether he maxed out in terms of his talent because he's so dedicated towards his footy. He's not going to grow much taller, obviously.
Yep.
And that's probably one of the reasons why he did slip towards the back end of the first round. But what was your guys' take on that point of view?
I mean, we always thought that, having watched him a number of times from 16s level all the way through and heard about all the other competitions he played at a junior level, he'd done the same thing at every level. Mm. So, and it's probably one sort of drawback of the tax system, that he couldn't go and play against men more regularly in the back half of the year. Like maybe not two games or three games, but maybe seven or eight, and actually prove that. So we always thought, probably from what I said earlier, his athletic ability and his running power was always going to give him a chance to play and play early. So we weren't so worried about his shape or what he'd been able to do and not be able to translate to AFL level. We thought he had the skill set.
Now, we know his character, and his character's become known to the wider footy public this year. What was your favourite interaction with Jack last year as you were getting to know him more and more and you know, deciding that he was the one for you in the first round?
He's got a great personality. He's very bubbly, as you know. He can talk, ask you a question and finish the question himself, so you don't actually have to reply. So you just sort of say nod, yes, Jack.
100%.
Yeah. So, he's just been desperate to play AFL footy, and he's obviously shown that through all his work and all those little things that he needed to do and people had suggested to him he had to do, so he went and did it. So
he's overly popular too, isn't he? I remember speaking to some Richmond players of late in the last couple of months, and since he's kind of come on board and sort of got a bit of a cult following, and they love him.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, no, he's infectious amongst the group. He's got that personality. He just wants to be out there and doing footy stuff. So the battle for Jack's been, why am I sitting in an office here and people are talking to me about things that don't really involve kicking a footy? I want to be out there doing that. Yeah. So that's a bit of a challenge for Jack, but he's working through it pretty well and he's grasping it.
We've seen that with his motivational speeches at halftime as well. One thing he did tell me recently was that when he has a shower, he will often not dry himself off with a towel. He just puts clothes on.
Yeah, I hadn't heard that one, but you've said that, Matt, it does not surprise me at all. So.
I hadn't heard that one either. That's great.
Hilarious. And I was like, don't you smell like wet dog? He didn't care.
No.
As long as he's got the ball in his hands. Cal Coleman-Jones and Noah Bolter were the next two picks, and very different to Jack in the way that I imagine you would have known they're going to take a little bit longer.
Yes.
Tell Richmond fans about how they're tracking.
Yeah, so Big CJ, he's played a lot of forward. He's played some really good ruck in the last month of footy. His program's a little bit modified to make sure that his body gets through a whole season and more prepping him for a really good pre-season going into 2019. So the coaches are fairly mindful of that fact, and so have our conditioning guys. So, but he's played some really good footy, he'll be a bit slower than the others, as most of the big boys are. But given that he missed pretty much the second half of last year through injury post the Nationals as well. We're very mindful of how much footy he's actually played. Noah's played just about everywhere on the ground, played a lot of back, but has played some ruck in recent weeks and some forward. So he's an exciting young player with great athletic ability.
Where do you see Callum playing predominantly? Is it ruck or forward?
Yeah, I think early he'll probably play a lot of forward and then progress into the ruck with a bit of pinch hitting, but possibly long term, and I don't really know that. I think he could be a long term number one ruck.
Okay, and Patrick Naish is the other one that you drafted as well. We haven't seen him yet at AFL level. Yep. Is that getting closer, or what's his progress been like?
It's been solid progress. He probably had his best game on the weekend in the VFL. We had 25 disposals, 11 contested, so he took a really big step forward. So he was always going to take a little bit longer, Paddy, with his body. He's a pretty light little kid, but his running ability was always there. So, and he's got to force his way ahead of some pretty good players at the moment to get into the team to play those sort of wing halfback roles. There's never a ceiling on when he might play, but I can't see him playing very quickly at the moment. But he's in good form at the moment. He's doing everything. He's fitted in really well to the group, and he's a pretty hard worker.
You guys would have been pretty glad that he got past your first three picks last year, I imagine.
Well, it sort of worked out pretty well for us, didn't it, in the end? So he's got a lot of class with the footy, Paddy. Our strategy was a little bit around some of the taller guys, so it was a good result for us.
2016 draft has already paid off, because last year's grand final, one of the heroes was Jack Graham. Got him in pick 53. Where'd you rank him that year?
Without looking, having the draft board in front of me, we ranked him a lot higher than that. One of those situations, Cal, you expect the recruiting managers after the draft to go, we didn't expect him to be there, but we probably didn't. We were a little bit nervous at the time at that pick. I mean, we had some options there, but we were after a big-bodied, strong mid, and Jack was the one, and it worked out well.
Just a theory on that side note, by the way. I'm interested in your thoughts. I've got an idea for recruiting.
I like your
recruiting
ideas, Cal.
Recruiting managers, as soon as the draft ends, they can do it before the draft, and it can be anonymous, but recruiting managers send their list in to Champion Data, for instance, and it can be anonymous, just 1 to 50, and then Champion Data can analyse where, on average, that player was rated. So let's say Jack Graham, he got to pick 53, but then Champion Data
an average ranking list.
Amongst recruiters. So the average was that Jack Graham was ranked at pick 32. So he was, by the view of recruiters widely, the average view is that he was a steal.
He was a plus 20 discount or something like that. That's an interesting one.
You see
that little bit in the NFL fantasy boards and that, Cal, if you actually go through that, which we do.
I wasn't on the rundown, but I've discussed that a couple of times with a couple of people, and I reckon it's got merit. I don't think I'll get it up.
And I reckon you're no chance whatsoever.
But anonymous, like, there's nothing to lose. It's just that it's good content for us, basically. But anyway.
That's all you want it for.
Yeah, but I think it'll be interesting, though. I reckon, I reckon would read it? Every recruiting manager.
Yeah, no doubt.
That's true.
But he's been awesome, hasn't he? And last year.
We've got to be mindful. He's only played 18 games at the moment, Jack. So,
which is crazy, a premiership and all of that.
Yeah, so we think obviously his best footy is going to be in front of him, but to come in and do what he did was pretty significant. Having said that, I think if he hadn't had some injuries at the start of the year when he played in the VFL, he may have played a few more games than that.
Shea Bolton's the other one from the 2016 draft. We saw him take an amazing mark, I think, in the VFL a few weeks back, and he's since worked his way into the AFL side as well. How have you seen his development?
Yeah, no, Shea's a really exciting talent. He's really learned about the professionalism of the game and how to train and how to look after his body. So he's come from a little bit further back than some of the other boys, having missed a fair chunk of his pathway with some injury before his draft year. His ability to mark the footy and kick some goals is pretty freakish. So what Shea is working to do now is add the defensive elements to his game on a more consistent basis. He has got the speed and the strength to actually get onto guys and actually put some pressure on. So that's his next challenge.
Kane Lambert's story is one of the best in the AFL at the moment. Probably goes unnoticed a little bit given the big guns in that midfield, but he's been outstanding since he came to the club. Did you ever expect him to play and produce what he's been able to do?
It's a tough one because you never sort of really expect that they might. They've got the traits to actually play some really good footy, but what they actually produce on the field, I never get too caught up in predicting exactly that they're going to be a 35 position player. Yeah. But which Kane has sort of shown that he can actually do. But no, he is a terrific story. He worked as hard as anybody to give himself an opportunity. He probably had a really breakout game in, I think it was 2014, played a final against Werribee where he had 30-odd and kicked four goals and really put his name up then. So he always had the running power. He probably just needed an opportunity.
Nathan Broad's another mature age that you've brought into the club and come in and played a really important role last year too. And Waffle has turned out to be a pretty good breeding ground in recent years. One or two come through that system. Does that make you guys spend more time looking at these mature ages and thinking, well, we know what we're going to get? There's a little bit less less hypothesising about what they're going to produce next year?
Yeah, a little bit. I think we've always assessed the mature ages no matter what competition they're playing in. And it's just a matter of you're probably seeing some players play that you think might be able to play a full football, but you can't just keep going to drafts and punting and thinking that four of them might be able to.
Yep.
In Brodie's case, I think he averaged 10 touches a year, 10 touches a game, sorry, in 2015. And then
I hope it was more than 10 touches 10 a year.
But then he doubled that in his draft year. So Brodie's one of those guys that had seen other people around him, particularly from the Waffle, get drafted and thought, well, why can't I do this? So he knuckled down in terms of his professionalism and his body and worked really hard and had one of those breakout years. So I think if you see significant change in their games from year to year, and particularly in some possession rates as well and contested ball rates at those levels, that gives you a bit of a heads up that they can actually do it.
How much are you recruiting with your game style in mind? I mean, the Richmond game plan has become famed because of the success last year, and it's really developed on its own sort of life of its own in many ways. But how much do you pick a player or look at a player and think, how can he fit into our team and the way we play?
Yeah, I think there's a fair element of that, and there has been for a little while. Probably what we've been able to put into our group from probably going back to 2011 and 2012, and Brandon Ellison, Cameron McIntosh coming in, was probably some running power into our group, and that's been a bit of a focus of ours. Not to say that we don't just pick guys that can really run, but that's a fair element in the game now. AFL footy is as hard as it's ever been in terms of the speed and the running power of the game, so you need to have that. And obviously our game and our premiership was based on some smalls and some pressure, but we did sort of go with 3 6-foot-5 boys plus last year in the draft. So we're always sort of looking at what the game might throw at us at some point, how it might change, how coaching might change, rule changes and that as well. So we're sort of trying to future-proof us.
After you win a flag, does your strategy when it comes to recruiting change at all, or do you have to tweak some things, or does it stay pretty much online?
I still think you need to stay with what your philosophies have always been, and particularly about what players, the coach needs to play his game style, and not just completely focus on the game itself, but the type of people you bring into your footy club. We're trying to bring in really good people, and most clubs are, but there's got to be a certain type of people and certain characteristics they need to have to actually play for Richmond, and we still need to maintain that.
Is there still a little bit of feeling like, yeah, let's cash in, though? You know, while we're right at the top, we've just done it.
Yeah. Yeah.
Do you know what I mean?
Yeah, I know what you mean. I'll probably don't get caught up in that as much. I reckon if you do that in recruiting, you can really step back and make some mistakes, I think, and not be as diligent as you have been in the past.
How important is bravery in recruiting? Because at the end of 2016, you brought in 3 players and you had to make some big calls to get them. You traded out an early pick to get Prestia in particular, and the other two come with different queries, and Caddy and Nan Curvis, but such huge inclusions to that premiership team. How important is it to just bite the bullet sometimes and go, yep, we're going for these guys, and come what may, they're with us?
Yeah, I think the strategy around bringing those guys in was always based around needs. We really needed that extra midfielder, strong-bodied midfielder that could really power out and get up and back was always a strong need for us, and we'd identified Dion probably from his draft year as well. And had been tracking him the whole time. So that was really important. We needed to give Ivan Maric some backup in Toby. Our list management and pro scout team, Nick Austin at the time, was really strong on what Nank might be able to give us, and I don't think the Swans really wanted to let someone like him go, but through an opportunity that he needed. So Nank was one of those ones that was really important. And Cads was probably a little bit more later in the trade period that sort of became available to us, and we thought it was too good an opportunity not to go for. Our diligence had been done on his footy and where he could fit with us, and we had some good intel that he would be the role player that he's been sort of been able to do now for us, as much in the midfield but up forward as well, was going to be really beneficial.
Unfortunate that Sean Hampson's had to retire. Do you look at a ready-made ruckman already during the trade period, or do you look at going into the draft for that?
We've obviously brought in big Callum Coleman-Jones last year, and Noah Bolter can play some ruck too. We've still got Ivan Soldo on our list as well, who's played some AFL footy too, and he's still improving. He's been able to dominate some VFL footy, and he's looking for that opportunity at AFL level. So we'll probably look to the draft, but you never know what the trade period and free agency can throw up, so you need to be covering all bases.
Well, just on that, Tom Lynch continues to be linked to the Tigers. Are you keen on him?
Oh, look, I can't really comment on contracted players at other clubs, and I don't think it's fair on the contracted players for other clubs or even our club as well. It doesn't really serve any purpose for me to comment on that.
What about Alex Rance's comments earlier in the year when he mentioned that, you know, he sort of had some reservations about the potential of a big fish joining the club? Do you speak to him? Does the recruiting team have some conversations after that, or did he approach the club afterwards and maybe clarify where he was coming from?
I'm sure that that Blair Hartley, our list manager, and Barmy had spoken to Alex about that. I don't think it was a comment that was one of those ones you get wrapped over the knuckles for. Alex has a really good he's a really good thinker of the game and a really good thinker of his group, and he's got a really strong group together. So he was probably just hypothesising, like a lot of people were, about what might end up.
There's some good vision of Neil Barm at the airport the other day next to next to Tom Lynch. The timing
very
was
convenient.
The timing was impeccable.
Yeah, it was. Yeah, it was a bit strange, that one. But yeah, the boys were our guys were getting back or something, or heading out, and he was coming in. So yeah, one of those things.
A number of players remain out of contracts. I know this isn't specifically your area, but given you're here, we will ask you about them regardless. Sean Grigg, Jaden Short, Jacob Townsend. Are these some guys that obviously have been really important to the club over the previous few years? Any update on where their contract talks it?
Oh, most clubs are going through uncontracted player movement at the moment. I'm sure that our list manager team is working pretty hard to get all those sorted. I can't see them not being at Richmond next year.
Are you in a situation where, with so many players out of contract, that you might actually have to hold off for a while, given that you might need some room for someone like Tom Lynch? is that a situation that you're actually dealing with?
We're still going down that line, but I understand why you will. I think most clubs are about the same. I don't think too many clubs have got everybody locked away at this stage of the year. Most sides will, and most clubs will actually get to this period and start probably in the last sort of 5-6 weeks finalising their list. And we're still sort of waiting on what rule changes might happen in that as well. So timelines on free agency and trade and all those types of things. So that probably affects it a little bit.
Just not specific on any player, but I'm interested, at this point of the year, have you got a really good sense as a list management team who might be available at other clubs and who might be looking for a new home and these type of things?
Yeah.
We're at round 18 now. I think every club's just been up on the Gold Coast with list managers, player agents running around like crazy. So at this point in the year, do you have a pretty good idea of who's out there?
Yeah, I think so. I think Blair does a terrific job in talking to the managers and having good relationships with them and working out who might be available, who isn't available, from a free agent and an uncontracted player perspective. And then obviously you've got some possible targets in there as well. So everyone's probably got a really good feel for what might happen. Having said that, then a Josh Caddy becomes available very late in the piece. So you need to be covering a lot of bases. So you need to have a really good understanding of all AFL lists and who you like and who you don't.
You mentioned rule changes and the potential of them coming in for next year's AFL season. Do you think starting positions will change how you look at key position players or any type of players?
Yeah, it's a tricky one. We sort of had brief discussions as a group and talking to the coach the other day about discussions they may have. We probably need to sit down and talk about that when we hopefully get some news on this sooner rather than later. I don't think it changes our philosophy a great deal. I think if there's starting positions, even if it's a density rule with two inside 50, three inside forward half, I still think you're going to need a lot of running power. So the game is going to be, if the game's going to be more open than it ever has, you're going to need some really good runners and running power. So I don't think that affects what we do too much, and probably what other clubs are thinking as well. You need to have the endurance capabilities to be able to sustain a game style if it's as open as what they're saying it's going to be. I hope they don't go that way, because I'm a bit fearful that it might open up the game too much.
Yeah, okay.
You've seen it obviously firsthand.
Yeah, I think, I mean, obviously we're seeing a few results here and there that suggest that the game can get blown out a little bit. I think with those types of starting positions that may continue or may even get larger. So with some of the teams that are struggling at the moment, and that happens every year, that you'll have teams that aren't going as well as others, but it may open up the game a little bit too much.
We've got a couple of wider recruiting issues that we like to ask all of our guests. So I'll start with the first one, and your thoughts on mid-season trading.
I think it has merit. I think there's some players at probably our club and other clubs that probably deserve the opportunity to go and apply their trade somewhere else at another club and help them. If that helps a club improve faster and give the fans the opportunity to see their club improve and improve their list quicker, I think it's a good thing. I don't think where we're at the moment where we have to wait and have one opportunity per year at the end of the year to improve our lists is a good thing. I think if we can actually generate some interest in the competition and give clubs the opportunity to rise quicker than others, I think it's good.
Speaking of waiting, we're still waiting on any knowledge about what this year's draft will look like in terms of live trading or not, but would you be for it being introduced?
Live trading of picks?
Yes.
Yeah, I think it's a good thing. Yeah, once again, I think it's an opportunity for us on draft night to be sitting there and waiting for a player to get to you who you hope might get there, and then he gets picked off five picks in advance if you've got the opportunity to actually do a deal to move up in the draft order to take that player. And so, having said that, it's not necessarily moving up. You might go, okay, well, we don't rate that block of players. We'll move out and we'll take a pick for next year or something like that to move around with. I think it's a good thing.
Do you think if it was brought in this year that you'd need your own setup or bunkers, or would you? You know, you couldn't probably do it from the floor of the draft room.
It'd be pretty difficult, I reckon. From there, in past drafts, we are very close
very
to
close.
Each other.
I reckon can you actually hear what's happening out of the table?
Yeah, you can. Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, you can. Tend to spend more time with the people next to me. Well,
who's next
me.
To you, Port Adelaide or Saints? Yeah, generally.
Obviously, we've got a pretty good relationship with the Port Adelaide boys, so we tend to spend a lot of time with them. They're usually. Sharing lollies and that with
us. There's a couple of chatterboxes
in
that crew,
yeah. There is. So, sorry, what was
the question? I can't remember.
No, I don't know. I think we need to be off-site somewhere. So whether the draft, like NFL, NBA style, you're back at your club or you're in somewhere else where you've got your draft boards, I think it's going to be pretty important for some privacy if you're going to be throwing around some ideas about trading picks. Probably not as intense as what those competitions would be because you're not actually trading contracted players like they are.
Yes, anyway. That would be fun.
Yeah, that would be fun. Yeah, I think, I'm not too sure our competition's ready. I'd like to see it at some point, but I'm not too sure our comp's ready just at the moment.
I think the AFLPA might have a few.
I don't think the players will like that at all. Do you think the draft's too compromised?
It's sort of getting that way, I think. I understand the need for the next-gen academies and to be able to develop multicultural and Indigenous talent. We've got the Northern Academies. We've got Father Sons. Obviously, we're trying to improve the talent pool, but, I mean, from what the statistics are saying, that the whole draft pool will probably be compromised in 20 or 30 years anyway. Yeah. So I'm not too sure where it stops, but at the moment you could probably see in this draft there's a potential of 20 to 25 players who could be bid on. Maybe not that, but they could, and that could really compromise what we're doing.
What are your views on the changes to the NAB AFL Academy and its structure and how that's all laid out for the next couple of years?
Yeah, I think the concepts are really, really good. I think having the ability to spend more money on more players is really important across the group. The NAB AFL Academy in the past has been really strong for a small group of players. And my thoughts have been that generally a lot of those players are going to get there anyway, and we need to spread our resources on more players. So the guys that are going to go a little bit later in the draft or build the talent pool a bit more is really important.
And what is the biggest issue in the recruiting landscape at the moment?
The biggest issue? I'm not too sure what the biggest issue. I mean, I've got a few thoughts about what we could change.
Yeah, what would you change if I put you in charge?
Yeah, I think, as I probably mentioned earlier, if we had the opportunity to give these, particularly the TAC boys and the Victorian boys, the opportunity to play against men more often, I think that would be a good thing. So what the AFL landscape looks like in a few years, is it an AFL reserves competition? Is the VFL different? And give those guys the chance to actually go and play regular footy against men. You look at the guys in SA and WA and even Queensland for that matter and Tassie, that they get to ply their trade against big bodies, physical players week in, week out. So whether that's they play eight games in the TAC and then they play eight games at senior level, I think that'd be a good thing.
You've seen it at Richmond VFL in the past, didn't it? Josh Dunkley played some VFL footy.
Yeah, we had Dunks, we had Clayton Oliver come through, we had Dan Howell come through, who've all got chances at other clubs. And I think it just gives you a measuring stick against those other guys and gives the guys some confidence. We had Nathan Drummond also come through, and he went back and played some terrific footy for the Murray Bush Rangers and got himself drafted to us as a 19-year-old. So I think there's a lot of merit in for them to go and play against men every week.
Well, Matt, thank you so much for coming in and talking all things Tigers with us. We really appreciate it, and I'm sure all the Richmond fans out there loved it. Cal, just before we go, your song of the week?
Song of the week this week is a song called Kick On by Sticky Fingers, Australian band. They're just back for their first big single, and they're a very good band. Kick On.
Okay, great. And did you get a free feed anywhere this week?
Oh.
Surely, somewhere. Or what about in the Gold Coast? You had a whole week.
Gold Coast. Surely on the Gold Coast.
I didn't on the Gold Coast. I had to, well, I mean, I was on work time, so
You did a lot of work, did you?
I did a lot of work.
Did you check out the sites?
The sites.
Yeah, the sites at the Gold Coast.
The Gold Coast, as in, what, like Dreamworld?
Yeah, Dreamworld, SeaWorld,
no, I didn't
casino.
I went to the casino. Oh. That's an outstanding casino. The Star or something it's called now.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, Broadbeach is a great area. It's one of my favourite areas in
But you're in bed
Australia.
By 8 o'clock every night,
Every night. Every night. Hey, Matt, thanks for coming in, mate. We really appreciate it. I know Tigers fans would have enjoyed it. And good luck for the rest of the year because back-to-back's on the card. So we're looking forward to seeing how it all rolls out.
Pleasure. Thanks for having me.
Cheers. All right. Thanks, everyone, for tuning in. We'll be back again next week.